The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Albert Breer with the Monday Morning Quarterback. He works with Peter King. Albert, one of the best in the business. He's been at MMQB for a while now, senior NFL writer. With the NFL draft now 12 days away, we'll do a deep dive with Albert Breer coming up at 10:20. Story of the day is Arizona State, the winner of the Boston Marathon. The winner of the Boston Marathon was at Arizona State. And on top of that, the first American woman to win the race since 1985. We will talk about Desiree Linden a little bit later in the show. But what a story to start out the week. The winner of the Boston Marathon, a Sun Devil. If you're one of those fans today, you can get all excited about that. That's cool. It's really cool. So more on that coming up. Had a very good weekend. Was in Tucson on Saturday night for the U of A spring football game. Eric was out at ASU on Friday night. Almost had my first hole-in-one yesterday out at Johnson Ranch. I think it was the eighth hole. Within like, I don't know. Guys, have you been in that spot where it's so close you just want to say it's a hole-in-one? But I was with my wife, my daughter, one of my daughters, and my youngest son. And like from 180. And it just... In the meantime, they're hitting houses while it's going on this hole. And I'm just like, guys, look at what I did. Almost.
Doesn't that count as a double eagle if it's a par three and not a hole in one?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I needed.
Okay.
That's
but
good
you're,
for you.
But you're going to call it a hole in one, even
Absolutely.
Though it's really a double eagle.
I'm going to call it a hole in one because I wish I would have done it. I wish it would have fallen. I walked up there like, that's going to go in. That's going to go in. Oh, my. And then it doesn't go in. And you go up there and it's just like on the lip almost.
And then you two, so close. Then you two putted.
And then I two putted, of course.
Yeah.
I did. That happened before at 16 at TPC Scottsdale. True story in a media event where I was this close. The guy I was playing with, he was a bank executive. We walk up there. He looks up at me. He's like 5 foot nothing. Tom Altieri. You guys know Tom. Looks up at me and says, you know, Sesmat, you're gonna gag on this. And of course I went, not yesterday. Rode the canals. If you guys ridden the canals before, the canals are a wonderful system that move water around. My wife and I rode 25 on Saturday and then hit a Dutch Bros. It was a good day. It was really, really good. On the sports front, clearly there's one story that's going on nationally. I'll get into that in a minute. What's going on in my mind in the world of sports on a Monday, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. It's great to have Sagicor Now with us. They believe in what we do here at Sports 360 AZ. You need to believe in them for your life insurance needs. What if something were to happen to you? Are you protected? Protect what matters most, and that is your family. Family, you get wiped out. Where are you at? It's very simple. Go to Sagicor Now, log on, get your free quote. That's at Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. We appreciate their support. Main story is LeBron James lost yesterday. LeBron James had a triple-double. And he lost. That doesn't happen. When LeBron James has a triple-double, ordinarily, Cleveland just rolls. Or whatever team he's on, they're going to win. But that didn't happen yesterday with LeBron. And I don't know, when I'm watching LeBron James with Kevin Love and J.R. Smith, I'm thinking that's just a team that's, I don't know, one really good player, another player that's had an up-and-down season. You guys know I've liked Kevin Love in the past, but, you know, are his best days behind him? Is he at that top of his career? They don't look like a team that is going to go out and win. I know you should never bet against LeBron James, but off of one game, first game of the playoffs, and Cleveland loses, and LeBron has a triple-double. What does that say about where they're at this season? You know, in terms of James Harden last night, if we're to talk about the MVP of the league this year, it is, in my opinion, James Harden. There are those that believe that Anthony Davis, because he plays with New Orleans, nobody knows he's playing with New Orleans, that James Harden is not the guy. James Harden, look at what he did last night against Minnesota. It's just one after the next after the next. And we always say we never saw this coming. It's not like he is the most dominant player when you just look at him out on the floor in some of these plays. It's just, I'm going to just stop, do my thing, and I'm going to go back the other way. And so the people in Houston love James Harden, and James Harden did his deal last night. It was good stuff there. Of course, me being me, as I sit here and look at the playoffs, I look at what Philadelphia did in their first game. We sat here when Brian Colangelo was hired in Philadelphia, and said, when both the Sixers and Suns were brutal, when they were both terrible, and now one of those two teams isn't any good still, and I think you know which way I'm going on this. And Philadelphia wins, and they're fun, and they're exciting, and they take apart Miami, and they put up all, I think it was 130 points they put up in their first game, and Joel Embiid didn't even play. And so from a playoff standpoint, in the NBA, it's off and running. It's no fun, obviously, that here we don't have playoff basketball. It's no fun that we don't have playoff hockey. I've been watching some of the Knights and the Kings. I'm kind of caught up in that. And instead, we're sitting here in this empty spot in April, wondering if the Cardinals are going to trade up for a quarterback. And the baseball team's off to a great start, but it would certainly be nice and make our springs much more interesting if the NBA team and the NHL team could just finally get themselves into postseason play. It really would be nice. Because I'm looking at the playoffs. I don't know who's going to win the Western Conference. I don't. I don't think it's going to be San Antonio. Popovich had the line where they look like deer in headlights, and they don't have Kawhi Leonard back. And who knows if he's ever going to come back. And you look at Oklahoma City, and you're like, meh. And you look at Portland, and you're meh. And Minnesota finally breaks their playoff drought, but they're not ready. They're clearly not ready. Houston will take care of them. And you go up and down the list, and it's which team is. But the team that comes out of the West, I can't tell you. Out of the East, the Boston-Milwaukee game was terrific. I only saw the ending. I saw the three-pointer by Middlebrooks that pushed it into overtime. Kyrie's not out there, so they're trying to win. Boston is trying to win with a bunch of kids out there. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. One of them is 20, the other one is 21. And the Celtics are trying to win with those two, and they have to go to overtime to do it. Kobe Bryant has decided to get back involved in basketball. He's not coming back out on the court. Kobe's doing something really smart. Those of you that don't like Kobe Bryant here in Phoenix, I'm sorry, you haven't enjoyed your life more. When he was with the Lakers, he'd come to town, you'd love to boo him, so he gave you enjoyment. If you didn't like what he did off the court up in Colorado, I get it. I understand it. If you see what he's done on the court and from a business side, you look at him and say, wow, I loved watching him as a player, love watching him even more now break the game down. Kobe's doing a thing now on ESPN. It's not ESPN on TV. He's just streaming it. He's doing a thing called The Detail. And all he's doing is he's hosting this bit. I won't call it a podcast, but he's hosting this segment where he's doing deep dives and breaking down the game of basketball. I think it's going to do really well. It's just starting. That's something I look at and say, wow, that's good. Later in the show, we're going to talk about the better job that's available for coaches to consider. We'll do that later. Is the Suns' job a better job than the Knicks or vice versa? And where does ownership come into play when talking about which job is better? The spring football games, we'll get into that later in the show too. I will just tell you off the top, when I'm standing down on the field at Arizona Stadium and Kevin Sumlin comes jogging out onto the field, and he looks up into the stands, and the stands might have had 3,000 people, not 30,000, might have had 3,000. They may say 5. There's no way it was more than that. But when he was running out onto the field at Texas A&M, what do you think, Eric, at Texas A&M? Was it 90,000?
Probably somewhere between 85 and 90, I'd guess.
85 and 90,000 fans that he's running out on the field. So I'm standing on the sidelines, not being a cynic. It's just a fact. Wonder what's going through Kevin Sumlin's mind right now as this scrimmage is about to get started. And there's very few people here as compared to Texas A&M.
Could be relief.
Might be. You know,
it could be, wow, I'm out of the pressure cooker. I don't have to compete in the SEC, and there aren't a lot of expectations around U of A football, yet I have a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback. I could probably do something here.
They were, I'll get further into the game, but before the game started, I was talking with some U of A people. There was a hockey game. The Roadrunners were playing. And so a lot of the media was over at the minor league hockey game. They weren't at the college football scrimmage.
Because it was a playoff game, I believe you said.
Playoff game, yes. So the bigger deal in Tucson, not Kevin Sumlin's first game, I'm telling you, as standing on the field, or a Heisman Trophy candidate, I'm looking around like, you got to be kidding me. This is a Heisman Trophy candidate I'm out here covering. And Kevin Sumlin's first game. So you could be right, though, Eric. Could be a relief. We'll talk more about that later in the show. Up next, though, Albert Breer, the Monday Morning Quarterback, senior NFL reporter on the NFL draft that's just 12 days away. His view of the Cardinals, what is he hearing in terms of them trying to trade up and the quarterbacks, too. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now to take a deeper look at the upcoming NFL draft. Every week during the regular NFL season, Peter King is with us. Peter always Skyping on in. Today, we're happy to have, we've had Albert on in the past, Albert Breer, the Monday Morning Quarterback, senior NFL reporter, of course, MMQB.com. Great content for you to check out. Albert, I appreciate you being with us. As we're sitting here 12 days away from the NFL draft, if you were to go through the top of the order, top four, top five, I don't want you to go all the way down to the Cardinals, but what's your top four look like today? What's your gut telling you?
Well, I think we know there are going to be at least two quarterbacks that go in the top two or in the top four. And, I think the rest is going to kind of tell us how the rest of the top 10 is going to go. Right now I would tell you that I think that the Browns are going to take Josh Allen at one. And the Giants really have a lot of control over where things go from there. I've heard their coaches like Allen. I've heard the GM like Darnold. I've heard everybody like Barkley. So the Giants heard different directions where they could trade out. If a quarterback goes there, then obviously that affects who the Jets are going to get. That means quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. If it's Barkley, we could be talking about one of the quarterbacks sliding. And so, my guess is that, if if everything was equal right now, it would be Saquon going 2. And then at 3, I think the Jets would be, in that scenario, probably take Sam Darnold. And then at 4, I know the Browns want to get an elite player out of this draft outside of the quarterback they get at 1. And so in this scenario, I think it would probably be Bradley Chubb, which would leave two quarterbacks on the board coming out of that top four of the big four quarterbacks.
Albert Breer with us, the Monday Morning Quarterback, senior NFL reporter. The Giants at 2, there's been a lot of conversation of them potentially trading out, Arizona trying to trade up from 15. Is that still the case as we're just a week and a half away from the draft, or do you think that's cooled some?
Yeah, I think Buffalo at 12 and 22 and then Arizona at 15 are both in play. I don't know if they're going to be willing to pay the freight to go all the way up to 2. And part of the problem that both those teams have is that, I think some of the teams, the Giants would be one of these teams. The Browns at 4 would be another one. The Colts at 6 would be another. Are open to trading down, but, I think there's a finite number of players they really believe are great players in this year's draft. And so I think, for all of them, it'd be a little difficult to swallow going all the way down to 12 or 15. And that's kind of, where the price goes up for those picks and what you'd be giving those teams in the future. And so my feeling is that Buffalo and Arizona right now, and potentially Miami too, that the sweet spot would be right there around 5 or 6. If you've got a couple quarterbacks who are falling into that range, that's where I think those teams, would start to look at making the move. Maybe Buffalo goes up to 2, all the way up to 2, and trades with the Giants. I just think it'd be awfully expensive to get there, and I just think the price could wind up being prohibitive for either of those teams that are sitting there, or any of those teams that are sitting there between 10 and 20 to go all the way up into the top 4.
If we were talking specifics on this one and looked at the list, Albert, Lamar Jackson's name is the one at 15. We've heard out here at Arizona, real strong, real hard. Do you believe, as you have canvassed the NFL, as you do at the MMQB, that he will be there still at 15?
I think so. He's a little bit of a wild card because everybody's going to feel a different way on him. I think he could go anywhere from 15 to 45. I think like he is in play in the teens. And I think there's also a scenario where he winds up slipping all the way through the first round. He's a different player. That's really the reason why. I mean, it's not going to work for everyone. You're going to have to commit to doing things a little bit differently when you get him on the field. And you're projecting and asking the question, is he eventually going to be able to win from the pocket? Is he eventually going to be able to grow mentally? Questions there with him. And then I think beyond just that, you know, the other question that you really have is if you are going to commit to playing a certain way, you know, is he big enough to take the pounding that, you know, carrying the ball 12 to 15 times a game, say, would put on your body in the NFL. It's complex, and there's a lot to it. And you'd certainly need a plan for Lamar if you were going to draft him. But that said, I mean, he's an incredible athlete. He can throw it. And, you know, there is a lot to work with there. And so, you know, the one thing that all NFL teams are in agreement with him on is how fun he is to study and how fun he is to watch. It's just for a lot of teams, he'd be a little bit of a difficult fit. And even for the teams that he would fit, there's, you know, the question of how he'd hold up. So there's a lot for teams to sort through with him. And, you know, certainly there are questions too.
Albert Breer with us, the MMQB senior NFL reporter. Before I let you go, let me just go through a thumb list of things here around the Cardinals. Did you personally like the Bradford-Glennon combination at quarterback here with Carson Palmer moving on? Part B, does it make sense then to bring in the young quarterback to learn from those two and not have all the pressure on him?
Yeah, I think it does. I'll start with the first piece of that question. I mean, given the options that were out there, I like the way that Keim and Wilkes have backstopped Sam Bradford with a guy who has some starting experience, you know, and that, you know, it's, look, we figured out last year that Mike Glennon's not going to be the long-term answer for anyone at quarterback in the NFL at this point, but he can still be a spot starter. And so, you know, you've got you bring in a guy who's got a ton of injury history, but has some high-end potential, and if, you know, he winds up getting hurt again, then you've got another guy in the stable who can come in and start games for you. And look, I mean, as far as like the investment goes, this is how you find a quarterback now. I mean, you go back 2 years, you see what the Eagles did. They brought Bradford back on a 2-year, $36 million contract. They brought in Chase Daniel at $7 million per, and then they trade up twice for Carson Wentz. Last year, the Bears wind up signing Glennon as their starter. It's interesting that those two names kind of come up there, but at $15 million per. And then they go out and they sign Mark Sanchez as a veteran backup, and they trade up for Mitch Trubisky. You know, I think that the logic here is that you need to throw multiple darts at the board, and you need to keep taking shots at it. And so, if you don't have a long-term answer and you're out there looking for one, it certainly makes sense to pull both the veteran lever and the rookie lever. And you know, maybe you catch the lightning in a bottle with the veteran that you signed. You know, obviously those guys are available for a reason, but at the very least, you know, you've given yourself one more shot at it, and you put a player on the roster who's going to make it so, you know, that rookie doesn't need to be pushed into playing right away. And so this is, I mean, to me, it's, I know a lot of people look at it and, you know, look at Arizona, look at Denver, see these big numbers on the contracts going to the veteran quarterbacks. You know, really, this has sort of become the new way of finding one, and new way of handling the position. And so I don't think Arizona is in any way out of the market for a quarterback, you know, in 11 days.
That's good stuff there. Christian Kirk, a local kid here, goes to Texas A&M, not the biggest, deepest group of wide receivers. Is he a first-round pick in your mind? What are you hearing on Christian Kirk?
Yeah, I think he's right on the borderline there. You know, low first, high second. You know, I think what's interesting about him is that, you know, he can project him right away into being a really good returner for you. And so, yeah, at the very least, you know, you're going to get a rookie who's going to be able to contribute in some significant way right away. And then I think it sort of becomes what you want to do with him, because he's a different type of player. And he's not like a Calvin Ridley, you know, who's going to go probably higher than he does, where Ridley's a very polished, finished product. You know, Kirk is going to be the type of kid where, all right, we've got to figure out what we want to do with him. Do we want to, you know, train him to be strictly a receiver? Do we want to make him a jack-of-all-trades? Do we want to use him as an H-back type? There's a lot of different things you can do with him. And so, you know, I think he may take a little longer to have an impact than someone like Ridley would. You know, but certainly see the talents there. And just from a special team standpoint, he'll be able to get himself on the field right away.
Before you get out of here, on the news side today, anything with Dez Bryant and the Cardinals? I'm getting asked questions about that. Is there any possibility he ends up in Arizona?
I mean, I wouldn't rule anything out with Dez right now. I would say that being around Larry Fitzgerald would probably be great for him. When I was doing reporting over the last couple of weeks on Dez, and, what's caused his production to fall off, what you got from the people in Dallas was he just couldn't separate. He's never been a great route runner. He's never been the most cerebral player. And so, he was at a point in his career where really he was going to have to adjust. And he was going to have to kind of reinvent himself the way Larry Fitzgerald reinvented himself in Arizona,
Yep.
And, I think they just didn't have faith that it was going to happen there. They didn't have faith that he was going to be able to turn himself into a better route runner, to become more cerebral, to do all the physical work that it takes to kind of make up for what you're losing in God-given ability. They just hadn't seen that, And so I think Fitz is like the perfect example for Dez Bryant of what you need to do to reinvent yourself at that position. And so I don't know that Arizona has any interest in him, but I would say that that would be one place that I think would be an ideal landing spot for him, just because it would give him the opportunity to be around, a player in Larry Fitzgerald who has actually pulled off what he'll be trying to pull off over the next couple of years.
No, that's well put. Albert, appreciate the time and insight. Thanks.
You got it.
Albert Breer with us, the MMQB senior NFL reporter. Dez Bryant. So they have the money, and we've heard all about the wide receiving stuff, and Dez says he wants to stay and play NFC East teams, and so far none of the NFC East teams have said, we're not going to take you. He wants to play Dallas twice a year. I don't know. Cardinals are going to play them in... The Cardinals have them on the regular season schedule, Eric. I know they're playing them in... I think we have to look that one up. But I know the Cardinals are playing them in those worthless games in August, so that wouldn't count as twice. I mean, that stuff shouldn't even be played. It's just garbage. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. So the big story of the day in progress here in the Valley is Desiree Linden. Desiree Linden became the first American woman since 1985 to win the Boston Marathon. She did so this morning. It was nasty back there. She's 34 years of age. She ran cross country and track while at ASU. 2 hours, 39 minutes, 54 seconds. Rain and wind gusts up to 32 miles per hour. Man, that just sounds nasty. So the first American female winner of the Boston Marathon in 33 years. And an Arizona State grad. So there you go. That's good stuff over on that front. She finished seventh at the 2016 Olympics in Rio. She made the 2012 London Olympics, didn't finish the race. She ran that race in the Olympics with a stress fracture in her femur in the 2012. Just reading here some notes about her. About that. The baseball team, I'll get over to the Suns, which is a better job, the Knicks or the Suns, here in a bit as they go through their coaching search. So the Diamondbacks, here's the thing about the Diamondbacks. They do things that aren't normal. And it's not just the fact that they took two of three. They take two of three from everybody. They're having a great start to the season. They'd won 11 straight against the Dodgers. But they have guys like Marrero passing a runner on base. Eric, did you see any? I know you were busy this weekend.
No, I did see that, Brad. I did see that. That was something that... I've never seen it. Not on a home run. I've seen it on, balls to the outfield that are caught, and the guy's caught in between, and the guy who hit it passes him, but never on a home run, especially a no-doubter home run like Marrero's was. It was – I mean, right when it left the bat, it's like, yep, I know it's night at Dodger Stadium, but that ball is going to be gone. So,
did you see what Dave McKay, the first base coach, did after the game?
Mm-mm.
So he walks in. I saw the clip with Jody. So Jody's in this scrum. They're around a player, and they're doing the interviews. And Dave McKay just walks in and says, hey, I got to talk to you guys. I screwed up on that play. That's my fault. It's never happened before. As long as I've been doing this, mea culpa, fall on the sword. Everything was, it was me, 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 me. Do not blame anybody else. Do not look at anybody else. It is all me. It's not Alex Avila. It's not Devin Marrero. It's me. And I love the fact that somebody would step up and be accountable rather than, well, that was a really dumb play. And then you never hear anything about it again. And you know that there's meetings in the clubhouse and in the coach's office. And then you have to go down there and say, so what happened on that play? And they're going to say, well, that idiot over there. And they never talk about it. So instead, Dave McKay comes right out on camera. I screwed up. I'm accountable. And I think people like that. They do. The thing that's fun about this team is, so Goldschmidt, the first 10 days I'm hearing this, man, Goldschmidt can't play. What's going on? And then he just goes crazy. He's hitting balls right and left. He made Dodger Stadium look like a pinball machine. There's balls flying all over the place off his bat. But then they have the drama that comes through. Like if there's any drama around this team right now, remember, they're in first place. They have one of the best records in baseball. And Jake Lamb's on the DL. Well, now Taijuan Walker is on the DL. Well, then Souza, who they pick up, he's on the DL. So they have these players that are impact players. Greinke's got a barking back. Zach Godley yesterday was not good. It was one of the few starts. Zach Godley coming into yesterday's start was the best in the National League in terms of earned run average. And yesterday he wasn't good at all. He had no control. And it was almost like Torrey Lovello was just saying, you know, you've got to work through these bad days, and I'm not going to come rescue you. So 6 walks later, and they get blown out yesterday. So what? They take 2 of 3. You take 2 of 3 every time out, you're going to win your division by a lot of games. I'm not expecting this to continue. But the baseball team has gotten off to such a good start, and it's made us completely forget about all the nonsense that's gone on, especially with the pro basketball team the last 6 months. It's great to have a team that is built right. There were question marks about, well, JD is leaving. Where are they going to get the run production from? They found ways to get the run production. Well, Greinke wasn't very good. Yeah, and everybody else has stepped up. And Zach, I thought, was pretty darn good the other night again. So they're off today. It's unfortunate. It feels like they're having too many days off. Like they had a day off just Thursday. I saw some of the players went to Disneyland and some went to like Harry Potter World because they're over in Los Angeles. They have another day off today. They had a Friday off in St. Louis the week before. Is it just me? I'm sure there's baseball seam heads that know that it's got to be now this year with this schedule, more days off to give them rest. But I kind of like the momentum. Just get back after it. I don't want them to have a free night. What am I going to watch tonight? Is it Dancing with the Stars with Kareem? Kareem's in Dancing with the Stars this year, and that's a Monday night show. My wife makes me sit through that. That and the Hallmark Channel are enough to just make me want to go jump. I can't do that. The scrimmages for ASU and U of A. So let's start first. We're going to have Chris Cartman in tomorrow on the show. But I'll start with Eric first because I'll give my U of A and what I saw because I went to Tucson Saturday. You were out at the ASU scrimmage and they held at the soccer stadium. Was there anything of interest from ASU's standpoint or was it just the usual scrimmage even though it was Herm's first time around?
They did it a little bit differently. They had everyone arrive at around 6 o'clock. They started their scrimmage at about 7:45.
Wow.
So they went through a bunch of team drills, and then they had a very short, as loosely operated scrimmage as possible.
Okay.
In fairness to ASU, I don't know if you remember Friday night, but it was extremely windy. So quarterbacks are trying to throw balls into the wind.
Tough.
The best nights were for the punters because there were some, like, I'm not even kidding you, Brad, there were like a couple 85-yard punts.
That's
where
awesome.
The punter just gets the ball up in the wind stream and just keeps carrying. But a bunch of guys didn't play, and you got the typical, you know, from Herm Edwards, we've improved, I like this team, we're not there yet, you know,
You know my stance on these games, it's... Please just look in the camera and say, we have no chance this year. We're going to win 2 games and I'm going to get fired. Now, I'm not saying that with Herm, but it would be nice if every so often.
You're never going to hear that, though.
A coach would just look in the camera and say, we missed on 15 of our guys.
It's like LOI day. Everyone has the best class. We're all going to be great.
Come
all
on out.
They're all going to be good.
So
there was a play where N'Keal Harry went across the middle.
Okay.
And he had his back to the secondary. And the ball was overthrown, and N'Keal Harry went up and one of the backup safeties essentially put his shoulder pads in the small of N'Keal Harry's back.
Mm.
And N'Keal Harry was laying down on the field, and everyone was like,
there goes the season.
Slowly got up and walked off the field, but that was probably about the most dramatic thing. There were a couple long touchdown throws, but it was good. It was fine. I mean, it's definitely a different vibe. You know, it's a very relaxed environment, climate with Herm Edwards and his staff. Not a lot of yelling. Very unlike Graham and his staff.
Did he bring his A game afterwards when he met with you guys?
He always does.
Yeah,
he always does.
He didn't pull any. He didn't pull anything out that you're like, wow, this was way.
I mean, the
way.
First thing he mentioned was, I haven't seen this kinds of wins since I lived in Kansas, which
That's
I
good.
Thought was kind of funny.
That's
but
good.
Then it was mostly just X's and O's on the team and stuff like that.
So it sounds like we had two polar opposites, because I go to Tucson and they were getting after it. And it wasn't like they were throwing the football very well and or running the football very well. But it was just a different feel. And to see Kevin Sumlin come walking out of the tunnel rather than Rich. I'll tell you, Eric, the strangest, oddest, I wouldn't say uncomfortable moment, but it was kind of cool in this way, is when Rhett Rodriguez was introduced as the quarterback to take over the offense. And he got a very nice round of applause. Very, very nice round. Rich Rod's kid is still there. And it's not like he played anywhere as close to even compete for the starting position. Starting position is nailed down. You have Heisman Trophy candidate there. So that was an odd spot. This kid Poindexter, the wide receiver for U of A, you're going to hear about him. What a great backstory. He went to Centennial here in the Valley, played over there for Coach Taylor, went on a volleyball scholarship to D2, left there, went to play over at Glendale Community College, left there, went to the U of A, and was killing it the other night. Like, there was a combination a couple of times. There were 11 balls thrown by my count between the two. And a couple of them were for scores. So it was good to see. There was some impressive moments down there. And then you look at them and say, wow, they have no size. They have no depth. Rich left the closet bare. They missed on too many kids, so on and so forth. There was like 4,000 fans there, tops. I'm guessing 3 to 4 tops. And by the time the scrimmage ended, there was maybe half that. It's not like a big deal to be at. It is still a basketball town. I heard people as I was walking in saying, yeah, Sean can't coach defense. Sean can't do this. Sean can't do that. There's nothing really about U of A football. They play Oregon at home. They play USC at home. They play Arizona State at home. They have BYU at home. What do you think on those? That's 2 wins, 2 losses? Where are you at on that one?
Go say it again.
BYU.
Uh-huh.
Loss. No, that's a win.
BYU loss.
BYU
probably,
was not good last
probably
year.
Probably a win.
USC?
USC loss.
Oregon?
Loss.
ASU?
It's probably
I'm calling that a win.
Probably a win.
I'm calling that a win. Because, I mean, Eno Benjamin is the running game for ASU, as far as I can see. Maybe there's more than that, but by the time they get to the end of the year, he's not the biggest back. I think he's going to get dinged up some. I could be wrong on that. But it's good stuff. All right, on the other side, Suns coaching search, some names that have surfaced. And what's a better job? The Suns, the Knicks, what these coaching openings, Charlotte's open right now. Where's the best landing spot for these guys that are all making themselves available? We'll get into that after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So on Friday, Dan Marley, the story came out that Dan said, no, I am not leaving Grand Canyon University. I am not interested in meeting with the Phoenix Suns. I am not going to talk with Ryan McDonough. This brought shockwaves through the community to some people's minds. To me, it did not bring an ounce of a shockwave. It is like this. There's no way that Michael Corleone is going to leave the family and go across the street to Barzini. It's not happening. And in this case, there's no way that Dan, although I'm sure Jerry would say I gave Dan my blessing and he went on, or Dan may just say I'm ready to go. No way Dan's going to go work for Robert at this point. No way. And he said down the road, maybe, but I think there's other positions. As long as Robert owns the Suns, I can't see Dan forgiving him for that. You can't forgive and forget for everything that happens. And in the NBA world, there's coaching jobs that are open all over the place. Right now, Orlando is open. Charlotte's open. New York is open. Milwaukee is open. Memphis is open. And the Suns are open. So you look at these jobs that are available. And the Suns are going to be bringing in David Fizdale. So David Fizdale was with Memphis. Did a nice job. He's a name that's been bouncing around. He's not going to cause any excitement in the community, I don't believe, except for those that really look at the NBA hard and long. That doesn't happen here in Phoenix. Because we have all the pro sports, it's kind of sort of something to do. If the team wins, I might get a little bit more invested. That's the general feeling here. So Fizdale, that's fine. Mike Budenholzer, that's a name that's been thrown out. I remember back in the day when I was at TV, the people around Budenholzer would get in touch with us and say, you know, he's from Holbrook, and, you know, he'd love to get back here sometime. And he was with Greg Popovich for 17 years at San Antonio. Now he's gone on to Atlanta. He's had his position changed down there. The Hawks are going through a rebuild. They've granted him permission to speak with the Suns. It doesn't mean that he's going to automatically leave. You'd think the Hawks would just blow him out. He has 2 years left on his deal down there. The Suns make a run at him, and then he goes back to Atlanta and says, hey, this is what they offered me. Okay, well, this is what we're going to offer you. And he stays. He uses the Suns simply like Blake Griffin, simply like LaMarcus Aldridge. Are the Suns now in a space where even when it comes to coaching vacancy and coaching search, that they are going to be used by those who are out there shopping themselves around? To think that Jason Kidd would be all in on the Phoenix Suns, there's not a chance that Jason Kidd would be all in on the Phoenix Suns. He's going to go talk to all these teams that are available and out there. If we're looking at the roster and you're looking at the ownership, if you're in these coaching circles, if you want to be the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, don't you ask yourself, self, what am I getting myself into in Phoenix? Well, man, they've got this kid Devin Booker who's pretty darn good. Yeah, and they've got this guy Josh Jackson that seemed like he figured it out in the second half of the season, that if you don't get invited to the All-Star weekend, even though you're a top four pick, probably means you're not playing that hard. Probably means you're doing a few things wrong. Probably means you should just wake the bleep up and get after it. And Josh Jackson did some of that. But you also have to ask yourself, do I have a supportive and stable ownership group? Now, Robert is not going to sell the team. It doesn't matter that there's been two groups that have come at him here in the Valley, and there has, that have offered him over $1 billion to sell the team, and they have, and he still says, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not interested in it. He's just one of those guys that's very content to say, I'm going to get us out of this mess. Does that mean he's being supportive? When you've gone through six coaches in 8 years, which they have, you have to ask yourself, okay, I'm going to go there. I'm going to get paid big money, and then I'm going to get my butt shot off. I'm going to be fired. Is it stable ownership in Phoenix? It's pretty easy to answer that question. Haven't had a playoff game since May of 2010, but they haven't sold either. How supportive is Robert? Does Robert go out and do his own things? I don't know. Ask Goran Dragic in the parking lot. That happened. So you have to look at your ownership group. Doesn't mean the rest of these guys aren't very good either. But you look at a job like Orlando. So Orlando's in a small market. They end up taking away the GM from Orlando, from Toronto rather. GM that built up to the Toronto Raptors. If you can win in Toronto, you can win pretty much anywhere. And he's been down on the ground in 11 months in Orlando. Orlando, great city, not a big city. What's it look like from a tax standpoint? A lot of attraction. But what is the expectation, too? If you come to Phoenix, and let's just say on May 15th, they get the number one overall pick, Robert's not going to sit around and say, well, we won 24 games this year, or 28 games, whatever, some low number next year. The expectation is going to be, we better make the playoffs or come close to making the playoffs the next season. I would say, looking at the Suns roster as it's currently constructed, even with adding a pick, a number one overall pick, I don't see it. How many years did Minnesota go? Was it 13 years before they finally got to a playoff game? And they added all sorts of players that were young, top picks. They missed on some picks too, as have the Suns. And so you can just find yourself on this endless cycle. So it's not the Suns can go out and chase guys all they want. The other jobs that are out there, is Memphis a better job than Phoenix? Milwaukee, you look at the young roster they have and the big man that they have. I mean, you look at their roster and you say, you know what? I would take Milwaukee and I could win there in Milwaukee. New York, nobody seems to win in New York. Why is that? Probably has to do with ownership. Charlotte. So some of these jobs, they're not the primo pristine positions. Someday Steve Kerr is going to retire. Is he going to hand the reins over to Mike Brown? Mike Brown has said publicly, yeah, at some point I'd like to get back into coaching. Is Mike Brown the right name for the Suns to go pursue here? I don't think he is, at least off the top. I don't really have a great name for you. I know guys like Fizdale and Budenholzer are just names that have coached. They have experience at the pro level. But that doesn't mean you don't go out as Danny Ainge did and said, I'm going to go hire Brad Stevens away from college and people are going to rip me a new one. And guess what? He's going to win. Or Billy Donovan has coached in college forever and I'm sitting over here in Oklahoma City and I'm going to bring him over and we're going to win. This job is not, well, we have Devin Booker and Josh Jackson. You got to look at the full deal here. Robert's going to want a new building. That's going to cause angst. Coach shouldn't have to worry about that. Attracting free agents to come to Phoenix that are good free agents, not just, hey, man, we landed a couple of free agents. No, Tyson Chandler is just a free agent. Jared Dudley's a nice guy, just a free agent. They weren't game changers. So there's a lot going on with the coaching search this week for the Suns. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric produces as always. For more content, you can head over to our website at sports360az.com, sports360az.com. We are self-funded. We appreciate those who support us. We've been at it for 6.5 years now, having a great time. We appreciate our partnership with AZ Central Sports and also with Fox Sports Arizona. We appreciate you checking us out day in and day out. Have a great Monday.